It's August 24th, 1940. London. Nighttime. Air raid sirens wail as Luftwaffe bombers approach the city. It's day 46 of the Battle of Britain, and in the center of London, a young American correspondent named Edward R. Murrow begins another historic broadcast.
This is Trafalgar Square. The noise that you hear at the moment is the sound of the air raid sirens. I'm standing here just on the steps of St. Martin's in the Fields. A searchlight just burst into action off in the distance. One single beam sweeping the sky above me now. People are walking along quite quietly. We're just at the entrance of an air raid shelter here, and I must move this cable over just a bit so people can walk in.
Long before America entered World War II, Edward R. Murrow brought the war into America's homes with nightly radio broadcasts during the Battle of Britain and the London Blitz. Reams of history have been written about the events of those days, but the past really is another country. You can read about it, but you can't go there. Unless you're one of the time-traveling historians invented by novelist Connie Willis. Willis is an acclaimed science fiction writer, the recipient of 10 Hugo and 6 Nebula Awards. In two new linked novels called Blackout and All Clear, she sends a group of historians back in time to the London Blitz. The books have been called as vivid an evocation of England during World War II as anyone has ever written. Willis tells Anne Strainchamps why the past is a natural subject for a science fiction writer.
Well, I think of it as the ultimate forbidden country. You know, science fiction deals a lot with other planets, all these places we can't go yet. But the implication is always that someday we'll get there. We always love forbidden countries. We always love the places we can't go. And the past is really totally closed to us. And as such has this, I think, incredible draw.
Well, tell me about your historians. You've set up the premise that the historians of the future have not just archives and written historical documents at their disposal, they also now have a time machine, so they can travel back in time to do firsthand historical research.
Exactly. And it never works out. So this is like about the fourth time I've done this, and I'm beginning to wonder why anyone would ever agree to go to the past, because something always goes wrong, because I see history as a chaotic theory with everything affecting everything else, including the presence of historians, which it's impossible to imagine that even if you went to the past and just stood there, you would not somehow affect things, because everything affects everything else in a chaotic system. So
is this the classic time travel paradox? You know,
yes.
What if you traveled back in time and killed your grandmother?
Exactly. It used to be the grandfather paradox, and I always thought that was so silly, because maternity is much easier to be sure of than paternity. But that was the premise. If you went back and killed your grandmother then before you were conceived, then you couldn't go back and do that, and therefore you were conceived, and therefore you could, but you can't because you didn't, etc. And one of those twisty-turny things. And writers live in terror of accidentally breaking one of those paradoxes and creating disaster for themselves.
Well, your historians live in terror of this also.
Yeah, my characters are terrified that they may accidentally have altered an event, because, as I say, even by standing there, you could cause a problem. But one of my characters accidentally ends up at Dunkirk, one of the main turning points of the war.
Now, Dunkirk was when most of the British Expeditionary Force was trapped in France.
Trapped in France on the edge of the sea. And as Hitler said, where are they going to go? Into the sea? And he took his own sweet time about coming to mop up, because he knew they had nowhere to go, and he had the British Navy pretty much pinned down, so he knew they couldn't take them off. But he was not counting on the resourcefulness of the British people. The British Navy sent out a call for anything that would float, basically fishing boats and weekend motor launches and the paddle steamers that went up and down the Thames. And this group of usually retired people, accountants, bankers, fishermen, anybody they could get, brought anything that would float over to Dunkirk and took off 350,000 men in 9 days flat under Hitler's nose and saved the world.
So what happens to your character at Dunkirk? Does he affect history?
Well, that's part of the question. He accidentally saves a guy. And then it turns out that that had huge ramifications for Dunkirk. And he spends the rest of the novel pretty much terrified of what he's done.
You know, this all really makes you realize how often history balances on just a knife's edge.
Oh, I hate this idea, but it's absolutely true. I mean, I love history and I read a lot of history and I'd seen several instances of that. But when I started looking for them, oh my gosh, they're everywhere. I mean, everywhere. And they're absolutely terrifying.
Are there particular pivotal moments in wartime England when if things had gone a different way, the war would have been lost?
Oh, absolutely. There was an occasion where the middle of the Battle of Britain, Hitler and his Luftwaffe attempting to wipe out the British Air Force, the RAF. And his plan was to wipe out the RAF during the summer and then in the fall to invade England and go straight to London and take it over. He had his invasion plans all written out. They're pretty terrifying to read. But this sort of accident happened. Two of the Luftwaffe pilots got lost in the fog, and the planes could not go back to Germany with their bombs on board if they failed to find their target because they didn't have enough gas. So you had to drop your bombs somewhere. So the plan was always to go out over the channel and drop your bombs if you couldn't find your target. So these two pilots went out over what they thought was the channel, dropped their bombs. And it was, in fact, a suburb of London. It destroyed a church and killed a bunch of people. And Churchill responded. He had said that if Hitler ever started bombing civilian targets, he was going to bomb Berlin. So he was as good as his word. He bombed Berlin, which infuriated Hitler, sent him into an absolute rage. And he responded by completely stopping the Battle of Britain and turning all his attention to destroying London. And there are historians who say that the RAF had 2 weeks' worth of planes and battles left. And there are people who say that they had 24 hours worth of planes and pilots left. So had that not happened, who knows? I mean, I find this all very terrifying.
Has doing this kind of research made you see current events differently? I mean, do you live now with a sense that there are alternative narratives, alternative histories running kind of in parallel alongside us all the time?
Right. And I'm always looking for, oh my gosh, what is the key thing that's happening today? It's something that isn't in the headlines. It's something that's, if we're lucky, it's on page 17 of the newspaper. It's not something we're seeing as the big news, but that's the really important thing that just happened, you know? And it's, of course, looking forward, it's impossible to tell what it is. That's the whole trap of living through history.
You know, we've been talking about the big ideas that you work with, but one of the hallmarks of your fiction is its wealth of contemporary detail. There's a story I wanted to ask you about. You just allude to it, I think, in the acknowledgments to the book, that you were doing some research at the Imperial War Museum and you ran across a group of women who had been alive and remembered the Blitz.
Yes. Actually, no, I didn't run across them at all. My husband, I was doing research on the Blitz exhibit at the Imperial War Museum, and I had told my husband to go off and look at bombs and planes and things, and I would meet him for lunch. And he was back in like 15 minutes and said, I need you to come with me. I have something I want to show you. And I'm like, come on, I'm working here. I'm trying to keep track of my notes and where I am. And he's like, no, you have to come. This is really good. And I, of course, go with him with that, you know, wifely sort of this had better be good attitude. And only to discover that it is a free day at the museum for anybody who participated in the Blitz in any way. And he has located and rounded up a group of elderly women, all of whom were ambulance drivers, canteen workers, anti-aircraft gun manners, etc. And he has bought them all tea and cookies and sat them down in the cafeteria so that I can interview them. And thus winning so many husband points that he is still working them off to this day.
What did they tell you? I mean, these are the kind of people who don't necessarily make the history books. They were
exactly
just young women doing what they had to do, which was what?
Exactly. You know, it's interesting because when I looked back on that interview, what came through more than the like specific, I did this and this was my job kind of thing, what came through was their courage, their matter-of-factness about their jobs, their resilience. I mean, these were the happiest people I have ever met in my life. And they laughed the whole time. And they had this wonderful sense of humor about everything. I finally said to them, you know, you guys make the Blitz sound like it was really fun. And they said, well, you know, it was. We were young. We were on our own in the big city for the first time. And there were all these men. And I thought that was sort of, I was like, I forgot this part. I had completely, till that point, not considered that at all.
When you were talking with those women, are there any stories they told you that just really stayed with you?
It was mostly totally routine stuff. You know, I mean, that's the amazing thing, is that people talking about their part, they never see it as heroic. They see it as their everyday job. One of my favorite movies is Enigma, which is about Bletchley Park and the decoding. Mm-hmm. There's a scene in that movie where they're trying to find out about a specific message that's being decoded. And when they visit the place where all these transmissions are coming in, and these girls, their job through the whole war was to sit there and transcribe gibberish. I mean, you know, letters that made no sense. They never saw the messages decoded. They wouldn't have been able to read them anyway because they were in German if they had decoded them. But they were just, their whole job was to sit there and write down nonsense letters the entire war. And one of the girls stops the hero of the movie and says, "Sir, is what we're doing important?" And he says, "Yes, it is." And she said, "Oh, good. I hoped so." And so, you know, I love that scene because it shows that so much of what you do, just the shop girls going to work every morning and sweeping up the broken glass in their department store and trying to sell things in between, you know, sirens and in between air raids, the maids taking care of the evacuated kids, the person who goes to work all day and then is a fire spotter at night and has to stand up on top of the, you know, the roofs and look for incendiary bombs, the air raid wardens who are really middle-aged ladies who have other jobs, and the people who knit socks, all those things. I mean, they just thought of themselves as completely ordinary people sort of doing their job. But in fact, they were winning the war and played a really pivotal role, as did those ladies at the War Museum. So,
well, that's the, I mean, you were talking earlier about that sense of terror that some moment you don't even notice in your life could turn out to be pivotal and things could go a different way. But I mean, the other side of that is what you just said, that every one of
you
us
could be right, yes, could be saving the world and not know it.
Mm-hmm.
That I absolutely feel that. And I feel that we're in a war all the time. Every day of our lives is part of the ongoing war of history. And there are decisions to be made. And it's absolutely crucial that we try to live good lives. And even though, just like my poor characters in all my books, they never have enough information, you know, so that they can be absolutely sure that what they're doing is the right thing. And there is no way to get that information. So they just muddle through and do the best they can, which is, that's how I see the human race. We muddle through and do what we can. And it's amazing that under the circumstances we do as well as we do. So,
Connie Willis talking with Anstrand Champs. Willis was recently inducted into the Science Fiction Hall of Fame. She's received 6 Nebula Awards and 10 Hugo Awards for her fiction. Her 2 most recent novels are called Blackout and All Clear.
When the light